This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Southern California, firefighters are still trying to contain several of the wildfires. Of the dozens that burned at one point or another, investigators believe two of the fires were set deliberately, including the Santiago fire. After a week and a half, that blaze still threatens hundreds of homes. So far, it's burned more than 25,000 acres and damaged or destroyed dozens of buildings. Eight firefighters were reported hurt battling this one blaze. While firefighters continue their work, investigators are trying to find out who set the fires. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger promised to hunt down the people responsible, and authorities offered $250,000 for information. It's notoriously difficult to investigate wildfires. They burn huge areas of land, and much of the evidence goes up in flames. Today, we'll talk about how these investigations work, what makes wildfire investigations different, and why people start fires in the first place. Later in the hour, a former assistant to President Bush argues that the United States is not preparing for war with Iran. But first, playing with fire. If you've ever been a victim of arson, been involved in an investigation, or work in a fire department, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin in New York, where Angie Burrell joins us on the line. He's a forensic psychologist and director of New York Forensics, a psychiatric consulting firm. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi.
And take us into the mind of an arsonist, if you would. What makes somebody deliberately set fire to a building, or in the case of what we've seen in California the past couple of weeks, to set fire to the dry brush of wild lands?
Well, you know, you're usually talking about someone who is socially isolated, perhaps a loner. Occasionally you'll get a couple of young men doing this sort of thing. One of the commonalities, at least the psychological commonalities, sense of powerlessness. Fire is one of those things that, starting at an early age, is often experienced by kids, particularly conduct disordered kids, disturbed kids. It's very exciting, and also it allows them to feel a certain kind of power, control over the environment, because once a fire is set, they can kind of sit back and watch the community scramble. They can watch an object crumble to the ground, and there's a lot of satisfaction emotionally for these individuals.
So it sounds like you're a subscriber to the theory that someone who set a fire may come around and watch it burn.
Quite often they do. I mean, that's the point, really, is to watch it up close, or at least perhaps from a safe distance. But, you know, when you speak to these fellows, I mean, why set it if you can't watch the circus that develops around it?
Mm-hmm. And it sounds as if, indeed, the idea of causing a lot of trouble, burning a huge amount of land, for example, or a big building, would that be a greater attraction or a lesser one?
Well, you know, it depends on, I suppose, where you find yourself living. For young men or adolescents who might do this sort of thing in a rural area, they have little choice. And in small towns, it might be harder to build to burn a building because the likelihood of being spotted or identified by people that know you, I think, would be greater than, let's say, for example, a large urban area. So.
But I'm saying they might deliberately wait until the fire risk was at its greatest, when the brush was dry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and they might be stimulated by the thought that, you know, now that there are other fires burning, this is an opportunity to sort of join in and play pile-on. You know, what's the chances of getting caught if we do play pile-on?
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between people who set fire to buildings in an urban or suburban setting and people who set fire wildfires?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I'm most familiar with individuals who set fires in urban settings. From what I know, though, and what I've come across, there still is some core elements, some commonalities. And as I said, it's that sense of powerlessness that gets transformed into a sense of power, you know, their omnipotence, great pleasure and excitation in watching the fire burn out of control, and knowing that, you know, you're the person that caused this chaos in the environment.
Well, isn't there a class of people who set fires for money, people I guess we might describe as arsonists?
There certainly are, and in that case, and then I've come across those types of individuals as well in my career. But, you know, they're doing it for money. Either they're being paid to set something on fire, a building, a business, or perhaps they're even setting their own business on fire. I think the difference between these individuals and those that set, you know, these large wildfires or, mm-hmm. or burn up buildings is that they don't really get pleasure from the fire. The fire is a means to an end, and the right. end is the financial rewards. For those fire setters or fire bugs that go ahead and set them in the wild or burn a building or what have you, they're really excited by the fire and the power associated with the act.
And that first case, that would include people who, well, I guess you're trying to cover up another crime or people who are doing it, as you suggested, for profit or even vandalism. I mean, I guess that's different than starting one of these big forest fires.
Well, it is. As I said, you know, in the first case, it's a mean. The fire is a means to an end, and the end could be, you know, specific revenge, money, being paid to do this, whatever. The people that set the fires because of the fascination with fire, these large brush fires like in California, it's a love of the fire and the chaos that ensues. That's really where the pleasure lies.
After talking to some of these people, what is it about fire that they find so fascinating and so exciting?
Well, fire is really very primordial, I guess, for human beings. I guess that's what helped civilize us in the first place. We're you know, drawn to fire. At least many kids are, you know, playing with it as children. It's quite dangerous. I suppose it doesn't take a lot of brains and a lot of skill to be able to set fires, you know,
mm-hmm.
a little gasoline, a match, what have you. So, I mean, if you're drawn in that direction and it does excite you and make you feel powerful and stimulates you in a way that, you know, you say, well, this is great. This is my high. This is what I get off on. Then, that's the kind of language you hear from people who set the fires.
And is it, you talked about some disturbed kids who get interested in starting fires, and do they, as adults, continue this behavior? Is it something that goes, spans the age groups?
It can, but it's not uncommon for young boys to play with fire, and while classically the old psychoanalytic sort of triad of sort of the disturbed individual or the conduct disordered individual who loves fire, you know, quite often and statistically most kids grow out of it. They're discovered, they're punished, they just stop it. They come to recognize the implicit danger in playing with fire. But no doubt those adults who set fires as adults and love to watch buildings burn, fields, forests, what have you, they were setting fires as kids as well. This has been a long love affair for them.
We're talking today about who sets fires and why. This, of course, in the wake of the wildfires in California. Authorities there believe at least two of them were set deliberately. Our guest is Angie Burrell, director of New York Forensics, a psychiatric consulting firm in New York. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with David. David calling us from White Cloud in, is that Minnesota or Michigan?
Michigan, Neil.
Go ahead, please.
Neil, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I had an experience about 5 years ago, or at least my son did, where a friend of his who he had a falling out with his friend, and the friend started a fire in a city hall that was under construction. And because of the falling out, he implicated my son in the crime. And so my son was charged with the arson. We, of course, were able to prove him innocent.
But mm-hmm.
I do remember that this fellow, the one that did start the fire, had a real problem with drugs.
Uh-huh.
A lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol abuse.
And did he say, there's the guy who did it, or did he say, your son helped me start it?
He said that he knew that he was guilty, and all the evidence pointed to him, but he said, yes, but so-and-so was also with me. It was very difficult to clear my son. The only reason we were able to was because we were able to prove we were on vacation out of state on the day of the fire.
Which helped, I guess.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, I guess. Thanks very much for the call. I'm glad it all worked out.
Oh, thank you, Neil.
Appreciate it. And I guess that raises another category, which doesn't quite fit what our caller was talking about, but there is a category of people who want to be play the hero in a fire, either investigation or helping to put a fire out, and that's they start a fire, and then they're the ones to report it. Sometimes, indeed, they're firefighters.
Well, yeah, we've seen reports like that as well, almost analogous to the physician or the nurse that over-medicates a patient or, you know, stops into their room in the hospital at the last minute and spares their life or saves their life. So, you know, when you get a firefighter or investigator who's setting fires himself, you're really talking about a fairly complex set of psychopathologies here. But at the end of the day, it's all about feeling powerless. And by becoming a hero, you know, there's a moment of glory here. There's a moment of they feel grandiose, transcendent. They're able to save the day and also enjoy the fire, I guess. It's two for the price of one.
Let's see if we can get Michael on the line. Michael's calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I had a question about perhaps what's going on with the psychology of somebody that wanted to set the fire for kind of an eco-terrorism purpose, you know, development going on in the land.
Or firing, as we saw cases up in the Pacific Northwest, car dealerships or that sort
exactly.
of thing. And I know that there was some effort to make those fires non-lethal. You can never make sure of that. Firefighters talked bitterly to complain about the carelessness of these people who start fires thinking, oh, they're not going to hurt anybody, when firefighters go into every fire worrying they're going to be hurt. But I wonder, Dr. Barrell, is that a different situation, or is that an aspect of the same situation?
Well, I think it's a different situation. Again, it seems to me that there's a functional motivation for them doing this, even though we might be appalled by it or say, you know, as you point out, you know, fire is something that you really can't control ultimately. You may think you can, but things happen when you cause this kind of chaos in the environment. People get hurt or killed unexpectedly. However, I don't think in these cases we're talking about people that are in love with fire or get off on the fires. I think they're trying to make a point politically, I guess. They're trying to drive home a message, and they're using fire to do so. I think we can see them as separate and apart from people that love setting fires, and they just stimulated by the whole act.
Michael, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for taking the call.
More on who sets fires and why, and how these blazes are investigated, coming up. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Fire officials in Southern California are looking for a white pickup truck that was near the area where one of the wildfires started. They're not calling that driver a suspect, but a person of interest in the arson investigation. Our focus this hour is on the kind of wildfire investigation we're seeing in California, how difficult it is to find evidence, and what drives someone to set potentially deadly fires. Our guest is N.G. Barrell, a forensic psychologist and director of New York Forensics, a psychiatric consulting firm in New York. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners are saying on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Chris. Chris with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I was calling. I was listening to your conversation. It's very interesting because I, as a young kid growing up in rural Ohio, I had a fascination with fire myself, and it started with lighting the plastic cover of our fire firewood and watching it drip, and led at the end to me just being curious about what would happen if, and it ended up with me burning a large portion of our backyard just to see what would happen, and I've grown out of it. I don't have this need to set things on fire as an adult now, but for me it was just this curiosity to see how far it would go and where I could rein it in, and luckily nothing bad really happened.
But when it looked like your backyard was going up in flames, was your feeling, oh my gosh, I've gone too far, or were you excited?
At first it was, you know, there was like kind of that rush, because that's the first time I actually used gasoline. Before it was all just matches and wood.
Mm-hmm.
There was like, I was surprised at how quickly it started, and then I got scared and put it out. And then when the grass died because of gasoline, and my dad, you know, looked at it and asked me what happened, I had to tell him, but and that was kind of where it kind of stopped.
I was going to wonder, did he also suggest you get any help?
No, I mean, he did talk to me about, you know, whether or not this was something I felt I needed to do, or if there was some satisfaction, and It was just a curiosity thing for me. I don't know if there's more to that, but for me it was just this curiosity to see how far I could go and then how quickly I could ring it back in.
Angie Barrel, does that sound typical?
In a lot of ways it does. You know, as I said, a lot of boys, latency age 12, 11, even teenage boys, partially out of boredom, partially displaced, maybe you might even say libidinal energy. They'll play with fire. They'll see how far they can push the thing. They'll be entertained by it. But, you know, in this fellow's case, luckily, his father confronted him, and there wasn't this deep need to continue. But even as he described the event, you know, he used the term rush, and that's what I was kind of getting at, is that these guys who set the fires really do get off on this. They get, you know, it's almost like a high. Perhaps like many quote-unquote addictions or compulsions, fire becomes one of those things.
And I was interested. He talked about, Chris was talking about his first fires, matches, and wood. Is it? I guess it's a definite step up when you start using an accelerant like gasoline.
Well, that's how the play goes. You know, boys will be boys. You know, you leave them to their own devices. And that's right. They'll start with a lighter or matches. And, you know, gee, that's not good enough, or it doesn't, you know, sort of excite us enough. And we'll ratchet it up a step, and we'll use some kind of accelerant, gas, or, you know, stuff that you squirt on the charcoals, you know, at the barbecue. And, you know, they play with it. They push it a little bit. But, you know, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, the consequences can be awful, even at that age, if it gets out of control.
Chris, thanks very much for the call, and we're glad your interest has subsided.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
One category of people who sets fire deliberately, we've mentioned, it's called the hero. John Orr was such a person. He was fire captain and arson investigator for the Glendale, California Fire Department, convicted of arson himself in 1992. Tom Propst is the public information officer for the Glendale Fire Department, and he was a fire prevention officer back in the early 90s when Orr was active. He joins us now by phone from his office, and thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And tell us a little bit about John Orr, and I guess the surprise that people had when the evidence pointed to him.
Well, it was a big surprise. He was a man who worked for the fire department for many years. He was our head arson investigator, very well known, not only through the state of California, but nationally, instructed classes on arson and finding cause and origin of arson. And when it came to the point where he was actually being looked at and eventually arrested and convicted, it was a huge surprise and shock to our department and really a lot of California.
And it turned out that he'd set thousands of fires.
Well, I'm not sure the exact number. I know there were several, specifically in southern and central California. I still don't know if the exact number has ever been determined.
But a lot.
But several fires, yes.
Yeah. And why, after he was arrested and charged and convicted, did he say he did it?
Well, to this day, he's never admitted doing it. He's in jail right now serving some life sentences. Actually, there's three individuals killed in one of the fires he was convicted of. But to this day, he's never admitted actually starting these fires.
Mm-hmm. And these fires, as we've mentioned earlier, they're notoriously difficult to investigate in the first place, particularly wildfires.
Correct. Yeah, they say arson is one of the hardest crimes to actually prove because you do need some sort of evidence, either visual or evidence left at the scene. And oftentimes it's burned away. The heat exceeds 1,000, 2,000 degrees, and that evidence is burned and never captured.
Let's see if we get a caller on the line. This is Nancy. Nancy with us from Philadelphia.
Hi. I've read an article about how it's only been in the past 25 years that there was some scientific research done on how building fires really burn and what the actual evidence. Well, actually, I don't know if they ever figured out quite what evidence of arson was. They found out that a lot of what they thought was evidence of arson was just ordinarily the way fires behave. And I'm wondering how much scientific research there's been done on telling the difference between an ordinary wildfire and one that was started deliberately.
Captain Props, can you help us out here?
Well, investigation is very difficult. The investigators go through numerous years of training and classwork, but oftentimes we can find if there's been accelerants used by burn patterns being a flammable liquid, we can tell on the floor. We now have dogs that are capable of finding accelerants used for arson. And oftentimes, our wildfires out here in California will start in areas that there can really be no other cause. There's no electrical lines. There's no any ignition source. It just kind of starts off a side of road, kind of out in an area that really isn't too accessible.
So by the process of elimination, then?
Correct. Correct.
And I understand the fire that's under investigation now, the Santiago fire, investigators said that they'd caught two sources of ignition, which they say is typical in arson fires in wildlands?
That's correct. I've heard that. We had 17 fires last week burning simultaneously in Southern California, and some of those have been accidental, and some, as you just said, in Santiago Canyon, they have found multiple sites where they are looking at some start factors there.
Mm-hmm. But as Nancy suggests, is the science, could you use more help from science if you could get it?
Well, I'm sure they're always looking at science. They're always trying to progress methods and ways of learning about cause and origin. Each year we take classes, and there's always some new information coming out, but I think we're always open to additional information if it's available.
Hmm.
Excuse me, I'm going to put the link in the blog because this article is more than a little interesting.
Okay, Nancy, thanks very much. We appreciate that. We'll
You're
take
welcome.
A look at it later.
Bye.
Nancy calling us from Philadelphia. And Tom Propst, one final question. I guess Mr. Orr is still in prison?
Yes, sir. He was, as I recall, convicted for 3 life sentences. So he'll be there the rest of his life.
Okay. Thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you very much.
Tom Propst is Public Information Officer for the Glendale, California Fire Department. He joined us from his office there. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is David. David with us from South Bend in Indiana.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi. My name's Dave. I used to start fires back in the late 80s and early 90s. Like, I'd set a warehouse on fire or, you know, stuff like that. But I got to do a couple of wildlife fires, and they were roughly 200, 300 acres only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I always got a kick out of it. I'd always use kerosene to light my blazes.
Yeah, and why did you do it?
Because, well, like the other guy was talking about, you know, you get a rush from it. I mean, it's a high, better than marijuana could ever give me.
And it doesn't concern you that there might be a building in there with people who might get killed?
It was never a concern for me.
Never a concern? You never thought about it?
No.
And were you fortunate enough that none of the fires you said ever did hurt anybody?
I heard that one guy died once, but, I mean, that was back in 90, I believe it was. And I felt really bad about it, and I wound up turning myself in for it.
You turned yourself in?
Yes, I did.
And what was the outcome of that?
I got, I had to do, about a year in jail,
uh-huh.
Over a year.
For a fire in which somebody died?
Yes.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 18.
All right. David, thanks very much, and we hope, is this under control now, do you think?
Oh, yes.
All right.
Definitely.
Okay, glad to hear that. That's good to hear. We appreciate that.
All right.
Well, thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
A surprising number of fires are set by young people, teenagers and even younger. Paul Schwartzman has been working with juvenile fire setters for over 20 years. He's with us now from the studios of our member station in Rochester, New York, WXXI. And Paul Schwartzman, nice to have you on the program today. Paul Schwartzman, are you there? We're apparently having a little difficulty with our connection to WXXI. And in the meantime, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Anna. Anna's with us from McMinnville in Oregon.
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, I had a really interesting experience. I was working for the Forest Service, and I got injured on a fire. And the paramedic that they sent out to pick me up, she actually set a fire on the way out to pick me up so that when we were going to the hospital, we were able to be the first on the scene.
Hmm. But it was an accidental start.
No, she lit it on purpose.
She lit it on purpose.
She was convicted of the arsons later in the summer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And you were there at the time.
Yeah, I was there. I had, you know, I had been injured a couple days previously, and they decided since it was getting infected, they called her, and she took her about an hour to come out and get me. And so on the way back, you know, over the radio came in this new fire that had been spotted, and we just happened to be right in the area.
Yeah.
And so we were there.
Oh, wow. Did you end up testifying at her trial?
I did.
That must have been strange.
It was really strange because, you know, she was a wonderful woman, and our drive, when she picked me up and took me to the hospital, our drive was, you know, 5 hours, just the two of us in a truck, and so we talked, and, you know, she was very compassionate, caring, single mom. And so when I got the call, I actually was in Ireland with a college class, and the FBI tracked me down at this hostel in Ireland and said, you know, you have to come back and testify at this trial.
Wow.
And so I did, and it was overwhelming, and it was intimidating, and it was sad.
Yeah, I bet it was. Yeah. Anna, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We're talking about fires and why people set them. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I believe we can now go to Rochester and WXXI and Paul Schwartzman, who joins us there. Are you there, sir?
I am.
Nice to hear from you today. Thanks very much for coming in. And I know that one of the first things you need to do with a young fire setter is find out why they did it just before you came on. We were talking with a man who said he'd set fires and that it was the rush.
That can be one reason. I think what we really have to be aware of, though, is that there really are a host of reasons, and that children as well as adolescents and adults who get involved in fireplay and fire setting behavior are not a homogenous group. There really are many different kinds of motivations, and they can range from simple curiosity, which clearly is not simple, can be exceptionally dangerous, but all the way to more serious psychiatric disturbance.
Do most of the young people you see understand what they did?
When we talk about, I think we have to clarify what young people are. When we talk about the youngest children, and I've seen cases as young as preschool who get involved in fire play, and they're more often than not, the primary motivation is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find there is ready access to matches and lighters. They're just on the coffee table, kitchen counter, momentary lapses in supervision. There may be some personality quality. These tend to be children who tend to be a little bit more risk-taking and hands-on by nature, and there really is a profound misunderstanding of really what fire is. They really don't know the power of fire is.
As they get older, one assumes motives can, in some cases, get darker.
Can, yes. But there, again, I think there was examples earlier in the program stated where young people will just kind of up the ante because they've been successful and they feel empowered and that they can have control or perceive control, and so that they may take, you know, experiment a little bit more. So it still could be a curiosity factor, but in that it becomes cumulative. There's learning in that. In their curiosity, they do discover its power, and they see the reactance of other people in their lives, parents, other adults, peers, and depending on what their circumstances are, probably the next most prevalent motivation we see is what we've labeled a cry for help. And these are young people who perceive themselves to be in pretty untenable situations. It may be chronic neglect. It may be physical or sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing some new trends. I probably shouldn't say they're new. We're probably learning about them more related to bullying behavior, where we'll see people victimize other people using fire, threaten to burn their hair, their clothing, their things. And then we've had a number of incidents where the victim will retaliate enough. We had an incident here right in Rochester, New York, where a young man ignited the siding of a house on fire, and turns out that's where the bully lived.
So he, in a way, I guess revenge, in a way, self-defense. Gets complicated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, it becomes complicated, and it's important that we understand the subtleties and the motivation. So it could be cry for help. It could then become more vengeance, anger. And then we may be seeing other more cognitive kind of disabilities, where we're really seeing thought disorders or other mental illness. I think there was a mention of echo terrorist was the word. There is actually a group in the country known as ELF, Earth Liberation Front, who are actually recruiting younger people, primarily high school age. And there they really believe. They're involved in this for altruistic reasons. They were responsible for major fires in Vail, Colorado, because they believed that developers were infringing on the wilderness. There's been fires in Southern California. Hummer dealers have been targeted because of pollution and kind of perceived piggishness.
Paul Schwartzman, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it. And sorry earlier for those technical difficulties.
No problem.
Paul Schwartzman, a mental health counselor with us from the studios of WXXI in Rochester, New York. And also our thanks to Angie Burrell, who's been with us on the line. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Sure.
Angie Burrell is a forensic psychologist and director of New York Forensics, a psychiatric consulting firm in New York City. When we come back, the next in our series on Iran, is the Bush administration preparing for war with Tehran? David Frum doesn't think so. We'll find out why. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.